Blog Talk Radio.
5, 6, walking forward. Not yet. Go!
And that Hey-o. Was awesome. Hey-o. That was awesome. That's going to be our opening. That's a clip of a rehearsal they did for like a Beastie Boys episode. We'll see in the future.
Nice.
Anyway, this is and that was awesome. This is a weekly podcast dedicated to each episode. We're going to review an episode of The Goldbergs. It's one of the highest rated. I think it's one of the highest rated television shows on cable right now, if I'm not mistaken. I know it's the highest rated among families who like to watch TV together. So that's cool.
Yeah, definitely families.
And it's interesting, I'm Ruben Wolf, and I've seen every episode of The Goldbergs, but I did not live through the 80s. If you want to introduce yourself.
I thought you were going to go
yeah.
on. My name's Sean Gibbs. I went through the 80s, and I've only seen one episode of The Goldbergs.
So that's
going to
be really interesting. Yeah, I think that's what is going to be really interesting about this, is we're going to dissect each episode through that lens. You'll be my 80s. Shaman, I guess, would be the correct phrase for it. You're my guide. And
I definitely am a shaman.
And today we're going to talk about the pilot episode, which is also called The Circle of Driving. So, Sean, I just kind of want to, before we launch into it, I kind of want to give a few pre-production notes, if that's all right by you. And even
okay.
if it's not, I'm going to do it.
Cool.
Anyway. So the show... So the show was created by Adam F. Goldberg, the show is autobiographical about his family, and he grew up in a Philadelphia suburb called Jenkintown, Pennsylvania. And he's really known because he had his hands in a lot of pots. Like, I think he was a producer of Community at one point. He wrote on a lot of sitcom staff, but I think he's really known for a movie. He wrote a movie called Fanboys, which came out about 10 years ago. Do you know it?
Fanboys? What?
Fanboys. Like, have you heard of it?
No, I absolutely have not.
So it came out in 2009, and it took place about 10 years earlier. And it's about this group of comic book nerds who hear of the new Phantom Menace coming out, and they kind of develop this idea to go break into Skywalker Ranch to steal a rough cut of the film from George Lucas. And the show
Phantom
was,
Menace. You had to bring those words into.
I haven't seen Fanboys, but I have seen Phantom Menace, and Fanboys sounds way more interesting than Phantom Menace.
Yeah, I would definitely go watch Fanboys by myself before watching. Yeah.
So the movie was produced by Happy Madison, who's Adam Sandler's company, and Happy Madison also produces The Goldbergs. So that's cool. He kind of got in there. And one more
it's
note.
It's all coming together.
Yes. It's a big conspiracy. It's an Adam Sandler conspiracy.
Oh, God. The funny Jews are taking over again.
One more note I want to give is that the show premiered on September 24th, 2013. And do you know why that date is? I wanted to pull that date out.
Was that when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor?
Close. It's my birthday.
Oh, okay. Very close. I was very close. Oh,
yeah,
well, are you trying to tell me that so I'll remember to get you a birthday present this year? Jeez, just slipping that in.
I wasn't before, but I totally am now. So give me a damn birthday present.
Nice.
All right. Let's talk about the episode, shall we?
Let me put that on my calendar. Okay, let's go.
So we start off with this narration by, as you pointed this out to me earlier, and I had no idea, and I've seen every episode of the show at least 2 or 3 times. It's Patton Oswalt who does the narration, and I thought it was just Adam Goldberg.
When I first watched it, I didn't notice, but within like the first – When I went to rewatch the first episode, I noticed it within like the first 10 seconds. I'm like, is that fucking Patton Oswalt? That's got to be Patton Oswalt. Then I Googled it. Yep, it's some Patton.
Yeah, and I even now I'm like when I hear it back, I'm like, oh god damn it, how did I not know that? It's like, and you're right, it's an easily Googleable thing. So,
well, they don't really point it out in the credits. If you notice, they don't really stab that in the back.
Right. Maybe does he not? If he doesn't want to be associated with the show, he's in every episode. So he's doing a terrible job of associating himself. So we get this montage of 80s. It's a mix of pop culture from the 80s and home videos from the 80s. And I think it's really emblematic of what the show is going to turn into. It's, as I told you when I pitched you the concept for the podcast, it's kind of like the X-Files, how the X-Files had like the Monster of the Week and they had the mythology episodes. This show really has the heavily 80s reference episode and like the family building episodes. And sometimes those two worlds meet. But it's really, but like sometimes you get like just one or the other and you can really tell which they're going for.
Go ahead. Ask your question. Sorry. I got one for you.
I was going to ask you, how do you remember the 80s?
Well, this goes along with my question. In the montage in the beginning, they're like Karate Kid, Knight Rider, Rubik's Cube, Jay Giles Band, who I was a big fan of, ALF, my mom was a fan of, Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, Miami Vice, E.T. This is all in like 10 seconds. E.T., Different Strokes, A-Team, MTV, breakdancing, no cell phones or internet. I mean, it's kind of like you could have just ended the episode there. Like they just totally went through the entire 80s. That's what I remember. That's all I remember. And a big wheel. Oh yeah. A big wheel.
Well, it's interesting that he remembers it. I guess you remember it through the pop culture lenses
yeah.
You remember it through the pop culture lenses and the family lenses. You don't kind of remember it. I guess there was nothing else. Like, I don't know, we look back at 2020, how we're going to remember it through the internet lenses and there's so many different other lenses to look at things now.
Yeah, we don't really, oh my God, I just thought of something horrible. We don't really have action figures to represent 2020. And if they did, it would probably be a bunch of people protesting.
That is terrible. There is an episode.
Or worse.
I know that there's an episode of the show where they do talk, like the opening narration is, the toys of the 80s. And I'm excited for that one because I want your take on that. But anyway, after this little this 10-second montage, we get to meet the Goldbergs. As Big Sister Erica puts middle child Barry in a headlock. And Beverly starts beating him with a shoe. And I wanted to ask, did you notice how she gets the shoe in her hand?
I thought that scene was a little odd, but how do you mean how does she get it in her hand?
So I again, this is like the third or fourth time I watched this episode. I never noticed this. Beverly gets up, kicks her foot in the air, and catches the shoe in midair, and then starts beating her kids with the shoe. And it's a super cool
moment. I didn't even notice that. Wow, you really like dialed in on all the subtleties of all the quips and quirks of this show.
Well, when you've seen the episode three times, you kind of notice it.
Rewinding before, I mean, that's a great jumping point about that. So every episode has a different montage in the beginning, or do they use the same 80s montage?
It's a different montage in every. It's a different thing.
Holy shit.
See it in the beginning. It's a different. Sometimes it's like, my brother Eric or my brother Barry or the toys of the 80s. They make it pretty
gotcha.
Obvious what they're getting at very early on. But anyway, I just want to point out. So the Goldbergs are, at least the immediate Goldbergs are, matriarch of the family, kind of the glue, is Beverly Goldberg, played by Wendy McLendon Covey, who's great in everything.
She's awesome.
Reno 911. Yeah. Murray Goldberg.
That's right. Duh.
What?
Mary. Yep.
Oh, Murray Goldberg.
No, I forgot that it was Reno 911. Sorry. Go ahead. Murray Goldberg.
Yeah. played by Jeff Garland, who sort of cornered the market on middle-aged yelling people.
Yeah.
And then the kids, in order of age, Erica is the oldest, played by Haley Arantia. Barry, middle child, Barry Goldberg, played by Troy Gentile, which is a terrible name for a Jew.
Ha! Yeah, it's pretty bad.
And the youngest brother and main character, Adam, played by, and I don't know how to pronounce this. It's Sean Giambrone or Giambrone or Brony, G-I-A-M-B-R-O-N.
He's a jabroni? He's the Iron Sheik? Telling him he's a jabroni?
I think he's a jabroni, but Adam is always holding the camera. He's always like filming things, and that's why we love him. So after we meet the Goldbergs, Patton Oswalt says it's September 3rd, and then Erica and Beverly are arguing about Erica dating a college dropout. They're arguing about Erica's love life, and I think this is really interesting because Erica has a really interesting story arc going forward. And I also want to point out Erica's kind of a made up character.
Okay.
The real Adam Goldberg has two brothers, Barry and Eric. But I guess some studios.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, so I think it's just so cool. I guess the studio was like, hey, there needs to be like another sister. There needs to be a woman on the show, like maybe like a sister or something like that. And instead of Eric, it became Erica.
Gotcha. That old chestnut.
Yeah, that, you know, sometimes the studio gets it right. You know, I love Erica's a great character, and I love what they do with her story arc because I always forget that she starts off so rebellious, and then she kind of turns into, well, you'll see where it goes, but she starts off as like a
Yeah, form. Don't spoil the rest of it for.
I won't.
Oh, but one now, thing of note, before we go spiraling into the abyss, I think it's great that Adam has a video camera. And it definitely points out the level of upper middle class income that the family has to spend, because we did not have our own video camera when I was growing up. We would rent one for special occasions like birthdays and Christmas. Highly sought item. That was a very expensive item back then.
And you'll see later on, like, some of the stuff that like they bought, like they buy Adam like some editing equipment, and I'm looking at it like,
what?
They have what?
That would have been like $10,000 back then, minimum.
Yeah,
for like some basic editing equipment.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, consider they'll go over what Murray actually does for a living, because I don't think they say it in this episode, but I don't think the means justify the product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, we learn it's Barry's 16th birthday, and Beverly cannot wait till Barry gets out of the shower. And we get this really, I think it was a really funny exchange where Beverly busts in to Barry in there while Barry's in the shower and says, "What do you want for breakfast?" And Barry says, "Privacy."
Yeah, I had none of that growing up. And that was such a super, like, creepy Oedipus moment, too. Like, she had no qualms about her son being naked behind this piece of vinyl.
Right.
It was a little creepy.
There's some funny moments where, like some of the people around the Goldbergs are like, "Your mom's hot," and like in later episodes.
Mm.
They're always like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah. In the montage, in the beginning, they talk about, they point out Jazzercise and the mom like doing the aerobics, and they nailed it pretty hard. Like, she had like the perfect outfit, the perfect hair, the perfect amount of cleavage while she was working out, the makeup on while like it was, I was very impressed with that little bit. Actually, it was really, It was really such a tight bit, maybe 6-7 seconds long, but it described her character to a T.
Was Jazzercise just something on TV, or like did you have to go out and buy a video?
I think you had to buy a video, but I think there were like spinoffs on like Saturday mornings or like Sunday mornings where you could like tune in on your local Kansas City 41 at 7 a.m. We've got, you know, maybe Bluesercise. You know, maybe somebody ripped it off. But I remember, I think you had to buy it. It might have been, you might have had to buy it on Laserdisc. Yeah, they don't talk about Laserdisc very much.
I know Richard Simmons. I think Richard Simmons comes up in a later episode, but I know like Richard Simmons in the 80s.
Sweet.
I wasn't sure if it was on TV or like was a series of videos you had to like rent or buy or whatever.
That's so funny. You just totally blasted me back to the 80s. I remember getting up before going to school in like fourth and fifth grade and eating eggs and bacon and having Richard Simmons on in the background. And no one exercising to Richard Simmons. We just had it on. Like, that's how you kind of started your day, was watching Richard Simmons. Okay, everybody, and a yes, and a one, and a two. You can do it, Janet. Like, that's just how you woke up.
That's funny. Everyone's got their morning rituals. Anyway, so Barry comes downstairs, and he's given presents by Beverly, who gives him – who. Barry shakes the box. It's a little box. Barry shakes it and says, oh, my God, I'm 16. It's going to be car keys. And it turns out it's just a locket with Beverly's picture in it. And I could totally relate.
Yeah. You relate to that? What kind of Oedipus things are going on in your house?
I have a mom who very much would give me, like, relics to make sure I never forgot her. And one of them, I think I was in college.
Oh, my God. Really?
I think she got it at, like, the kiosk in the mall. It was, like, this little tiny stuffed animal, but it had a picture of my mom's face. And she's like, always remember me.
You still have it? No.
I guarantee I either left it in Buffalo or I just carried it in my backpack. And I was like, this is so nice. I'll carry it everywhere I go. And I just threw it in my backpack. So technically I am. But she would always like give me like, here's like, she'd send me, I used to like collect like Smurfs when I was a kid. And she would send me like a Smurf, like, remember me.
Oh shit. How old are you? Like, wait, you're Smurf age? Really?
No, I was born in 91. It was at the decline of the Smurfs, but my mom had
a bunch. Yeah, that was after.
Yeah, but I collected a bunch, and I loved the Smurfs growing up. So anyway, Murray, this is one of my favorite moments in the show. Murray gets Barry an REO Speedwagon cassette tape because the guy at Sam Goody said it was, quote, a hip track. Sean, what the hell is Sam Goody?
Okay, we had Musicland. I feel like the higher end malls had Sam Goody, like outside of my neighborhood. Sam Goody was like, I think it was a spin out of some other places in the 70s. You could get vinyl cassettes, maybe an AC/DC or Iron Maiden t-shirt, some buttons for your denim jacket. The dad also says, I trust the guy. He had a ton of buttons on his jacket. And then the more buttons you had back then, the more street cred. Like, because you would have to, like, pick out, like, oh, wait, you have a Madness button? Oh, you like British New Wave and ska and punk. But you have, like, a Judas Priest pin, so you're edgy because you're metal and you're rebellious. Yeah,
oh,
Sam Goody is where you went to the mall. You went to the mall
to
buy
you had, like,
your
the denim. You had the denim jacket, and then like you had like the band names attached to it. I think I've seen that before.
Yeah, when I was in seventh grade, I specifically remember I had to go to school with like preppy clothes, but I would adorn them with buttons so that I would appear edgy. And I remember I would sneak my Judas Priest, AC/DC, and Iron Maiden buttons with me to school, put them on my Izod shirt, and then take them off before I went home so my mom wouldn't know. Or my stepdad wouldn't know, actually.
Were you edgy?
ARIA Speedwagon. What's that?
I was going to say, did people stay away from you because you were so edgy?
Girls. Girls specifically stayed away from me because I was so edgy. Yeah. But going back to ARIA Speedwagon, yeah, dude, that's embarrassing. Man.
I love it.
If I got caught with an ARIA Speedwagon tape by any of my friends, I would have been ostracized and thrown out of the cool button kids club for my entire tenure at junior high.
Yeah, I have a little bit more on ARIO Speedwagon a little bit later. So after the presents, we meet Pops in the drive. He drives up in this Burt Reynolds Firebird.
Yes.
And Barry's like, "You're going to give me the car?" And Pops like, "Hell no, but you can have my old one." And then he delivers probably the most sexist line I think has ever been delivered on cable television, at least on this show, and like the new millennium. Erica says, "Why don't I get a car?" And Pop says, "Well, you're so good-looking, people will just give you rides."
Yeah. And she, like, nods in agreement. Like, oh, yeah, I am really good-looking, and all these guys will give me rides. Each time I hear that, it's a weird punch.
I think that's, like, the cable sitcom equivalent of Smile, Toots. Or Shake Your Tail Feather.
Well,
you know, like that.
Well, the grandfather definitely is portrayed as that guy through every scene. The misogynistic,
right.
Old school.
In fact, in the next scene, Adam and Pops are at the Waffle House talking about their love of boobs.
Which
is really weird.
And he's talking about don't honk them. You have to cradle them.
And Adam's like, I just want to shove my face in them.
We all do. Oh, quick side note, rewind back to the mom catches the keys and doesn't allow the son to have the car. She's dressed in a multicolored purple, teal, yellow jacket that like you see all the hipsters in Bushwick wearing right now. And absolutely no one wore that back then. No one, maybe some white trash, trailer trash wore it, but absolutely no moms in the suburbs wore those awful clashing colors together in a jacket that is so prominent today. I don't know how that became like a mainstream hipster thing, but I mean, the rest of her outfits are on point, but that was definitely askew.
I'm excited to hear what you're going to think of later Beverly outfits, because she definitely has like a uniform.
Oh yeah. I've definitely been honing in and hitting pause and recollecting and thinking a lot about this.
This is great. So let's monitor each. We're going to set aside some time each week to talk about what Beverly's wearing. Cause it is. Like,
oh yeah.
It's almost like a shirt itself.
I wish the thrift stores were open right now, because I would just go out and buy the outfits and wear them while we're talking about it, just so I could feel what she was feeling.
I also want to point out, since we rewind around a little bit, after Beverly does make the interception of the year with the keys, Barry says, "The only person who understands me is Flavor Flav." And he runs into the house in his really stupid way, and Murray goes, "Who runs like that?" And I just want to point out, apart from it being a funny line, Barry's run becomes a running gag. And I don't know if this is a choice Troy Gentile made on his own, or if Adam Goldberg was like, "Do that." But that Barry's stupid, like, behind the arms, George Jefferson with a pep in his step run is a running gag. So
gotcha.
Anyway,
also, the funniest part about that bit is I recognize that because I was so into Public Enemy at one point. But he also goes, "The only person who understands me is Flavor Flav." Like, he doesn't say Flava. He says flavor.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah,
and it was such a white kid suburban thing to do. I thought it was charming.
It is adorable. So they're at the Waffle House, and or the House of Waffles. I guess they couldn't get the rights to Waffle House, which is funny because they get the rights to another franchise at the end of the episode. Foreshadowing. And we meet Waffle Girl.
Yeah.
Adam's pining for, and she comes back in a later episode. This is not Adam's love. Let's just say that. But she does come back later. I also wrote we're talking about how upper middle class this family is. They have a family podiatrist. The Waffle Girl
right.
is the daughter of the family.
Right.
They have a whole, no, like, we have a foot doctor for the whole family.
Just a side note, a note that I had right before this scene starts, Adam said something like, or maybe it was Barry said, don't poke the bear. That wasn't a phrase back in the 80s. And I always like to point out when there's inconsistencies in like when phrases of the 90s and the aughts came out, but people used them in stuff from like the 60s, 70s, 80s. It was like, no one ever said poke the bear in the 80s. Ever.
Did you look that up?
I remember the first time I heard don't poke the bear, and it was like 10 years ago. So maybe I'm just behind. I don't know. Maybe I'm a nerd.
Because, you know, like, curse words have been around since, like, the 1600s, you know? They really, like,
Zoe McIntosh, that was the girl's name.
Oh. Oh, who, the Waffle Girl?
Waffle Girl, yeah, Zoe McIntosh. We all worked jobs back then when we were like 12 and 13. By the way, totally illegal.
Is it? I know. I thought I knew like 12 and 13 year olds with jobs. They worked at the grocery store when I was a kid, like in the early 2000s.
Or fast food.
Is it illegal? Yeah, or fast food.
It's totally illegal.
Oh, anyway.
I don't know how they got around.
Don't ask, don't tell. Different meaning of that phrase.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
So Adam and Pops, I'm sorry. So Waffle Girl mistakes Adam's name for Alan. So Alan and Pops, he
right.
like, and Adam goes, screw it, I'm changing my name to Alan. I'm so in love with this girl. So Alan and Pops leave the Waffle House and bump into Barry, who's eating a garbage bag of donuts. So he has a friend who's a manager
so
at the Wawa, which is a legitimate gas station, Wawa. I don't know about their donuts, and I don't know, like, it's weird. I don't know. Do you think it's weird that, like, they just have all, like, a garbage bag full of donuts that they just throw out? Like, that's a lot of donuts.
Yeah, that was a really weird scene.
Even if you think it's weird, it comes up again. Like, Barry's friend with the manager of the Wawa and how he's able to get these garbage bag of donuts comes up in later episodes.
It's kind
so
of
anyway,
almost like a substitute for like drug use or something. Like, yeah, my friend hooked me up with these when I get depressed. Like, but they couldn't really say, yeah, he gave me acid or weed or methamphetamine or something. It's just, yeah, that was like his drug to make him get over his loneliness. It was, yeah, a super weird scene.
It's a very dark look at it. Sometimes a bag of donuts is just a garbage bag of donuts. And that's my opinion of the
I
show.
Guess so.
Yeah. And so Pop says, we're going to get your lights. We're going to get you a car. Don't worry, Barry. And Pops drives them home in his Thunderbird or his Firebird. And I want to point this out because it's alluded to. So the real Pops, I think he died of Alzheimer's, and it's alluded to several times in other episodes, but it's not
right,
a major plot
okay.
point. Yeah, so that's – if you thought it was weird that, like, all of a sudden he has this brain fart, it's because he has onset Alzheimer's. Yeah, so he so because of that, Pops forgets everything and endangers the family by driving into a burger stand. Which ends them all
It's all coming together now. I didn't realize that the plot was so heavy in this. Yeah, it's all coming to make sense now that you've seen more episodes than me.
Yeah, especially in this first season, they'll allude to it a little bit, but like it's usually just to like sometimes serve the story, which I think is not entirely fair. But like you'll see, like the show kind of one of the things that we're doing with the show is like this: we're going to talk about how the show kind of exists in this universe of its own that it like kind of created. So it's just kind of like Pops will have these brain farts when the story serves it. It's like a light spin on a dark thing. So anyway, they're in jail, and we get our I want to point this scene out because this is another running gag. Beverly is berating the police officer who locked up three of the four men in her life. And it's interesting because Beverly usually saves her rap for like the school principal or her son's teachers, her son's or daughter's teachers. But here she gave it to an actual cop. And then we get our first bleep word. There's one in every episode. I'll haunt your bleak, bleak dreams. I think we should take.
Oh
like,
yeah,
minute,
all,
like,
I think she says, "I will haunt your motherfucking dreams." Yeah, I actually.
Yeah.
Lip rip. And by the way, her outfit in that scene is so fucking on point. She's got like this acid wash denim jumpsuit with a giant gold belt. It's so not overdone. It's just perfect. And her hair. They really did a great job in that scene.
I love how you're so in tune with the fashion of the 80s.
Oh, you had to be. Everybody was so hypercritical of what you wore back then. You would get called out on everything that you wore.
Oh, my God. That feels so much more refreshing than, like, everyone calling out for a Twitter post, you know?
Yeah. No, like, if you went to school dressed one day as a punk and you came back the next day or, like, next week as a metalhead, you would get called out by everybody. If you were into New Wave and then you came back, you know, dressed like you liked REO Speedwagon, everyone would have just stopped talking to you. Like, it was so huge. It was so important. Social structures were just built around fashion. Like, if you went to a dance club or, like, a club or, like, a roller rink or, like, the mall or, like, who you hung out with was how you dressed. Today, you could be – I could be dressed like I am now with shorts, a vodka shirt, and be bald. And I could go to Bushwick and go to a party. Back then, you couldn't just walk into any party dressed however you wanted. You had to dress for that. Like, it was – very structured.
Shoot. It sounds like a nicer time. Like poser culture doesn't really exist now. It's just like people are just.
Oh my God, I haven't heard that word in so long. Poser. I got called a poser once in seventh grade because I wore a sleeveless shirt to school, and a punk rocker called me a poser because I had parachute pants on, Chuck Taylors, and a sleeveless shirt, which was actually the punk rock theme at the time. It was also the breakdancers theme at the time.
Tisk, tisk, tisk. Can't be wearing those shirts. So getting back into it. So they all get home
at jail,
and we have the scene out in the lawn of them arguing, which then translates into the house, and Murray agrees that he's going to teach Barry to drive. And we learn that Barry is Murray's favorite. And you can't tell why here, but it's apparent later because Barry's into sports and Murray's into sports, and the daughter's obviously not into sports, and Adam's more into sci-fi. So Murray kind of has the soft side for Barry. Which
yeah,
is mean.
And also, another side note, I know I'm just beating a dead horse, but Murray's the grandpa, right?
Murray's the father.
Oh, wait, what's the grandpa's name?
Pops, or Al.
Pops. Okay. So in this scene as well, Al is wearing a Fila tracksuit. I didn't grow up in, like, I don't know if, like, the upper class or upper middle class wore Fila, but we didn't have Fila in my suburb. There were no Fila tracksuits whatsoever.
It seems like the generic old person garb is like a tracksuit.
Yeah, definitely. But the brand Fila back then wasn't a thing until maybe later 80s. So I wonder if that was like, maybe that was like a glitch. Because I remember like Fila kind of breaking out in like the hip-hop crew, the hip-hop crowd. I remember my first pair of Filas, but it wasn't, it definitely wasn't old people stuff. But yeah, tracksuits for sure. Sorry. I'm such a stickler for detail.
That's great. No, I love that. So when Murray teaches Barry to drive and it really doesn't go well, he holds up traffic. And I was really trying to, they stopped in front of a movie theater and I was really trying to see what was playing at the movie theater to get like.
I did too. Oh my God. So did I.
Did you, were you
I
able to make
figure
it out?
Out?
Yeah.
No,
I couldn't
figure
it was
out super blurry.
See, you can assess these, like the timelines by like the clothes. I would be able to assess it by the movies playing or like the news of the day. Like these cultural milestones.
I was definitely checking out like the youngest kid's like shirts. Like he had a Transformer shirt, he had a Star Wars shirt, and in the background there was like a Maximus Prime doll by the TV from Voltron. And I was like trying to pick up little things in the background to see if there were any inconsistencies. I even looked at their sink to see if maybe it had a modern fixture on it, but they were so good with their detail that they had like a late 70s, early 80s model of like a sink attachment where you could unhook it and spray with it. Like they were
oh my
so
God.
Good at it.
You're so good at
yeah.
But Adam's shirt, whatever, I don't look at Adam as like the cultural touchstone of the day because every shirt he wears is like, what's that 80s sci-fi reference? Like one day he'll wear like a Blade Runner shirt,
right.
The next day he'll have like a Star Wars shirt, like next day he'll have like a Caddyshack shirt. I think it's like a John Belushi shirt. Somewhere that comes up, or some type of shirt. Anyway, so Murray teaching Barry to drive doesn't go well, and when Beverly comes to bail him out, she decides not to. You fix your own mess. And Barry gets towed away because he's holding up traffic, and it's just a whole shit show. But Beverly has bigger fish to fry because Adam and Pops are returning to the Waffle House, and Bev catches them. Which apparently was wrong. I don't know why like going to the Waffle House is such a bad thing.
Yeah, because she didn't want her boy. She's like, I'm already losing my kid to driving and my other daughter. But then she also said, Monte Cristo's fried meat and cheese, kid, you'll be on the bowl for hours after that, which is totally not true. Like, I don't remember being on the bowl for hours when I was like in sixth grade. It was just like, you went to the bathroom and that was it. There was no taking time pooping back then. I mean, these days I'll take my time. Oh, here's another interesting. Oh, and one of those phrases that no one said back in the 80s. Adam says to Zoe McIntosh, "Sup, girl." No one said that. That's an aughts thing, or that's a like late 90s. Sup, girl. He was trying to be all cool. Sup, girl.
So Adam's really he's not playing to the rule of the 80s that he's creating his own little universe. Also, since you pointed out Beverly, Beverly's interference with the kids, I think, is grossly exaggerated for comedic effect. But then, like, you at the end of every episode, there is, like, a cut to, like, home video. And, like, sometimes it is like, oh, my God, Beverly really did that. Like, really, like, march into the school and demanded justice for nothing, you know? So this is the first time like Beverly's exaggerations or Beverly's interference is really shown and exaggerated for comedic effect. But then, so Adam then says, I can't remember what he says, but he says, something like, I want to see boobs or something like that. And Zoe McIntosh.
Oh yeah.
And Adam storms out. And then Pops is like, what the hell? Like, I just want to spend time with the kid. That's all. And Pops and Adam do have, like, a really sweet relationship, albeit creepy in this episode about boobs. They do really have, like, a sweet innocent relationship. Like Pop just loved.
You know what?
Time
I remember my great grandfather in the '80s being a little on the creepy side with me because he was kind of a father figure to me. So he would kind of push me to be, you know, he's always wondering how many girlfriends I had or who I was dating or like. So maybe he was living vicariously through me. So yeah, I guess that does kind of have like a bit of validity to, I don't know, maybe suburban. I don't know. Maybe I just grew up with a creepy great granddad.
Maybe. I think it's rather sweet. But anyway, we cut to this. We cut to now the Murray Barry moment, and this is. So Murray and Barry have like this little moment, and. Murray opens up a little bit, and I just want to point this out because it really predicts like the story structure of the show. Like they'll ham it in more. Here's a little nicer, not as hammed in, but it's usually like the structure of the show is like one person Barry gets a crazy idea, and then someone else doesn't like it, and they push back on each other, and then at the end Barry says, "You know, I just have this really, I wanted to be right for 5 seconds because I have this insecurity." And then it makes the other person feel really bad. And that's kind of what we get here. But the scene ends with this really funny comedic note of the car, they get the car returned and Barry goes, "Can I drive?" And Murray's just like, "No." And then we get our song.
Yes. Oh, that's such an important part of the entire episode. This is like so 80s. This is like
what we get. It's every episode. Every episode is going to end with an 80s song. So actually,
what?
Sometimes it's not.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm prepared for this mentally. I got to go through all this like rewind, reload, revamp, redux with all these emotional songs.
It's okay. I'm here for you, Sean, because this song is REO Speedwagon. Can't Fight This Feeling by REO Speedwagon, released in 1985 and peaked at number one on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100.
Damn.
And then we got our little montage of Murray's opening up in the car and they're trying to sing to the song that Barry's clearly not into but knows every word to, which is quite telling of who Barry, like Barry's kind of a, Barry is a poser. Barry is 100% a poser.
Oh yeah.
Beverly's throwing blankets. Pops relinquishes his license, and then Adam and Pops. We do have 2 minutes left, so I want to get through this quickly. Adam and Pops.
Yeah.
Pops introduces Adam to Hooters. The new Hooters, which we're talking about timelines. Sean, Hooters was established in 1983.
Damn.
And it's based on a popular Steve Martin phrase from Saturday Night Live. Do you know anything about that?
No.
Apparently,
I do know that we all knew. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no. What were you going to say?
I do know that everybody in the 80s knew every single word to I Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore because you couldn't go anywhere without hearing it. And, The only time it was valid to be listening to that was either at a high school prom or at the couples skate at the roller skating rink. I would never sing along with that in the car with my mom, but it does show that the parents were always trying to be cool with the kids back then. But I'm curious about the Steve Martin thing. I have to look up the Steve Martin Hooters thing.
Yeah, it's funny you bring up the roller rink because foreshadowing to next episode, I think.
Oh, boy. Really?
But before we get there, the end of the episode is, I think this is such a predictable joke. They're all sitting in the car, and Barry's about to drive off, and he looks back, and every person who's watching is like, he's going to go forward, and he does go forward. But he busts through the garage, which I thought was pretty funny. And that is
Yeah, that was very – and that is what?
It was very well. I would say that's
I'm sorry,
the episode.
Yeah, definitely. Very slapstick, very 80s humor, too. Funnily enough, going back and watching it the second time, I actually enjoyed it again the second time.
And that was awesome. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you for having me.